The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. How are you?
Booker Tov, it didn't surprise me that people were going to go to food on the whole Belgian thing, really. I mean, it was going to be Belgian waffles the next thing. I don't know where we were going to go next.
Absolutely.
And beer. Let us not forget beer.
Yeah, of course.
Let us not forget the drink as well.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, really. So that's what Belgians are known for, that. They're known for beer, chocolate, and anti-Semitism, right?
And Bruges.
Well, amongst other things.
Yes, exactly. All right, Anthony, the focus on the news continues to be on Iran. It's now turning to Iran's greatest threat and weapons, which is, of course, its nuclear program. Prime Minister Netanyahu has warned that Israel is aware of all that is going on with regard to Israel's nuclear program. Anthony, is this just posturing? Or, I mean, we do know that Israel has known and has had insight, but what's the sense of Israel's knowledge around the nuclear program?
Well, once upon a time, you know, Israel's secret service was a very secret thing. But under the Netanyahu period, the whole issue of secret services become a lot less secret and a lot more public. And this is just one of those examples. I know that people within the Shin Bet, within the IDF, would, I think, prefer for the political echelon to be a little bit less public about some of the things that they're doing, because I think it risks some of the operatives in the field. And of course, it kind of ruins the surprise element to some degree as well. But certainly we've got into an era in the general kind of public where social media and openness, too much openness even, maybe too much information is a thing. And certainly we're seeing that with Prime Minister Netanyahu's video, which he released saying to the Iranians, be careful because we know everything that's going on within your nuclear program. I think some of it may be posturing because to some degree, I suppose it's not necessary to say it. I mean, we've kind of showed all of these documents that were pulled out of Tehran, out of the secret stash. And I don't think that the Israeli Shin Bet needs to say anything more than that, right? If they can get hold of those documents, the message is clear that nothing is off limits. But I was amazed at how many stories surrounding Iran were in the newspaper today. Iran's secret underground missile city has been unveiled. Iran threatens retaliation against Greece for U.S. use of its military bases. An ex-Shin Bet official is saying that Iran may use Chinese cyber tech to attack Israel and the U.S. So these are kind of just some of the stories that are littered in the newspaper all around what's going on in Iran, never mind the fallout from the assassination of Soleimani, and never mind the whole fallout from the shooting down of the Ukrainian airplane. But the main focus when it comes to the Iranian nuclear program has been on how close Iran is to actually producing that nuclear weapon. And from the information that's been released into the public and some of the articles that have been written, people are suggesting that Iran is probably 1 year away from having enough enriched uranium to produce a nuclear weapon, and probably another year away from actually producing this nuclear weapon. So within 2 years from now, in theory, if left unchecked, Iran could actually have a nuclear bomb, which of course would be
fascinated by the, we're still having the EU, we're still having France saying, no, we need to go back to that nuclear deal because it's what the world needs right now. If Iran is only effectively two years away, as you say, if left unchecked, from being weaponized in the nuclear field, surely this is, this should be proof enough that this nuclear deal has failed miserably.
I think there's no doubt at all. I don't think we need to prove anything anymore. The nuclear deal has absolutely died a death. I mean, the Iranians have made it pretty clear that they are not doing anything at all in accordance with that nuclear deal. They are effectively ignoring it. And to the extent that some European nations may still be trying to abide by it and resurrect it, I think that's a kind of a futile exercise. And I think that the Europeans have now recognized it without saying it publicly. But Prime Minister Netanyahu said very unequivocally not only that Israel knows everything that's going on with the Iranian nuclear program. But he also went on to say that Israel understands that that Iran is very, very close to weaponizing with a nuclear weapon. And he went on also to say that Israel will not allow that to happen. So that is really the key part of all of this. The question is, what is Israel going to do to prevent this 2-year clock from ticking to the point that Iran has its own nuclear weapon? And I think therein lies the point of interest and you know, the fascination about what the plan is from an Israeli perspective to either lengthen that period or to somehow prevent the production of a nuclear weapon from taking place at all. I think that's really the fascination. So I think there seems to be common agreement around the world that Iran continues to enrich uranium, that it is very, very close to building the nuke, that we're all hoping that will be prevented. And I think that the nuclear agreement was really designed somehow to prevent that nuclear weapon from being built. It seems in the fullness of time now, with the benefit of some hindsight, that Iranian agreement, actually the nuclear agreement, actually encouraged the production of the weapon rather than prevented it. And there are some Europeans who are now saying maybe we should go to the U.S. style of agreement with Iran, which is of course no agreement and sanctions being applied and you know, a very, very stringent approach being taken. There is certainly there are some noises coming out of Europe along those lines, but of course the nuclear program continues to be the main focus now that the dust has settled on the events of the last couple of weeks, and it's going to be fascinating to see whether Israel indeed is able somehow to put a spanner in the works. I don't think that we're going to see the Israeli Air Force flying F-35 stealth fighters to Iran and bombing the underground nuclear facilities. I can't see that kind of a situation arising. I think it's all going to be much more subterfuge, if that's what you like to call it, underground activities, quietly causing things to happen, you know, along the lines of all of those unexpected deaths of the nuclear scientists, along the lines of the virus that was planted in the nuclear plant, which seemed to crash all of those centrifuges, causing a lot of damage. I think it's going to be something along those lines, but who knows?
Conventional, it's unlikely to be conventional. Howard, you've got a question?
Yeah, no, I think it's important to note that it was the Americans who destroyed the deal. That you can't expect the Americans to withdraw from the deal and the Iranians to stick to it.
So the
Europeans are saying, well, the Americans withdrew and imposed sanctions. We didn't, so you should still stick to the deal. But the deal had all of the parties and all of the parties had commitment. So it was really America who started unraveling and now you can't get it back.
I think that's 100%. The question is, was it a good deal in the first place? Perhaps that's a separate question, but of course you're right.
I think it's part of the same question. The question is, you know, why did the Americans so-called spoil the deal, as Howard said? And there is a view that is put out there, which is that the Americans didn't spoil the deal. The Americans just came out publicly saying that whatever this deal was being presented in a public way was not the way that it was being adhered to or not adhered to. And even though the International Atomic Energy Agency had made some noises about Iran adhering to the deal, there were certainly strong indications and evidence had been produced that Iran was in fact not sticking to the deal. So there is an argument, a very strong argument, which says that America's so-called destruction of the deal was in response to the fact that the Iranians weren't really sticking to it.
Although that said, Anthony, you know, and I was horrified by the deal, and I absolutely agree with the American reaction. That said, I don't think there's been real evidence presented that Iran, you know, because in fact, even what Israel had showed that they had all the documents, they were ready, they were keeping it, but not that they were necessarily currently working on the program, unless I don't see something.
The documents produced by the Israeli were historical documents that predate the deal. And there was no evidence produced that the Iranians weren't sticking to it. But the Israelis opposed the deal from the start, as did Donald Trump. And it was part of his election campaign, and therefore he went to unravel the deal. Mm. And the problem is, once that egg starts being scrambled, you can't get it back.
Although, how do you agree, for example, with Justin Trudeau's comment? Do you think it was fair? And I don't know if you saw his comment yesterday, where he said that if it wasn't for the escalation, i.e. Donald Trump, that the Canadians killed by the Iranians would be home with their families. Now, of course, it's a true statement. No one can argue the validity of the statement, but it's just as true to say if Ukraine hadn't sent an airline into Iran, those people would be alive. Of course, a lot of things are true. Doesn't mean that it's a true representation or a fair representation of the fact.
So, there are a number of ways to interpret it. One way you can interpret it is to say, if the American embassy in Baghdad had not been attacked,
correct,
which was the initial escalation of this, then in fact the airline may not have been shut down. So it all depends where you start history and where you start your narration.
That's my point.
I think there are a few things that we need to put in place here. First of all, Howard, you mentioned that the deal in the first place wasn't a good deal. Israel was opposed to the deal because Israel had the view that even if all elements of the deal were adhered to by all parties, this deal was still ultimately going to result in the fullness of time in an Iranian nuclear weapon. And that was not okay. So the deal itself, even if everybody was, holier than thou in terms of sticking to the deal, that deal was not going to prevent Iran from producing a nuclear weapon, because there was a period after the deal where they would be able to do whatever they wanted, and that was never going to be okay. So that's the first instance. In the second point is that there certainly was evidence that Iran was not sticking to the deal. There was evidence that was produced. It was even reluctantly acknowledged in retrospect by the International Atomic Energy Agency. The documents, I agree, were historical and were not part of the evidence of proving that the Iranians weren't sticking to the deal. But there was certainly evidence to show that the Iranians were really trying to do whatever they can in order to pull the wool over the eyes of the international community. So those are the first few things. Now, let's also not forget that Iran, at every opportunity, has stood up in public forums and called for the destruction of Israel on and on, absolutely, over and over, without any qualms at all. And so where does this fit into the overall picture? Where can we turn around and say, hang on, guys, that is not okay. And whatever comes after it, be it the assassination of Soleimani, be it whatever comes after that, is all fully justified in light of the fact that this is a sovereign country calling out for the destruction of another sovereign country. We need to somehow acknowledge that. And I don't buy into the fact that Justin Trudeau says, well, if the Americans hadn't intervened, then the Canadians would be home. Where does Justin Trudeau justify Iran's constantly calling for the destruction of Israel? That is my question. I don't buy any of the other stuff that comes after that, because nobody really calls it out enough.
You see, I think your question is inappropriate, because number one, he never said that. That's not what Justin Trudeau said. He said if the entire situation had not escalated, the plane would not have been shut down. It has nothing
he as a Prime Minister of Canada, he has a responsibility to clarify what he means. He can't create, and in fact, a lot of the press has taken it up to mean that it's a criticism of Trump. His responsibility is to clarify that. He can't put out a statement like that. And in fact, you're quite right. Maybe it does mean about the maybe it means Soleimani and the protesters. Maybe it means the attack on the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. We don't actually know, but he certainly should have clarified that.
I agree he should have clarified it, but ultimately in this entire thing, and it comes down to, no one wants to defend Iran. It's a despicable human rights abusing country that has destabilized the entire Middle East. It's an inappropriate in its actions. But we must always deal with the facts of the matter rather than the propaganda of the matter of how these things escalate.
Unfortunately, we do have to leave it there. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We didn't get through more than one of our topics, but it was a very, very interesting one, nevertheless. We'll catch you, Anthony, tomorrow morning at 7:45. It is 8:01. A couple of messages. Had Russia not been so strongly influential in Iran, the plane would have not been shot down. I think Russia instructed Iran to take the plane down. That's from Dov. Dov, all right. Look, it's, do you have a basis to say that? If you do, I would love to hear it. B says, good day. I think that France and England behave with Iran in the same manner as they did with Hitler. I'm not quite sure what they mean. Dov saying it's unusual to play real music this early in the morning. All right, well, there we go. And why are you promoting Red Hill and not a Jewish school? Are they paying well? Well, actually, Dov, the outside broadcasts don't come free. There is a real cost to them. And if somebody wants to do an outside broadcast, absolutely, they have to pay for it. And certainly, we would be very happy to do outside broadcasts from Jewish schools, but we are very happy to do it at schools that certainly ones like Red Hill, where many Jewish students attend as well. It is 8:02. I apologize that your news is slightly late.